Hello, funky listeners. It's Funk Radio.
Yay! You turned into like a down-tempo Barney for a second.
I think we discussed this last time.
I think we did.
Welcome, listeners. This is Peter.
And this is Kyle.
And we're back.
From outer space.
How you doing, Kyle?
Not too bad. I just got back from the high desert of Laughlin, Nevada. I was very tired when I got back, but it was fun. I felt like when I was there, even though I was only there for like a day and a half, that the environment, being filled mostly with old white people, was slowly transforming me, and my aging was accelerating. I started getting wrinkles in places that I didn't have them before. I got a couple of gray hairs. It's like being out in that environment ages you faster.
Well,
but luckily I got back just in time to regain my youth.
I'm glad you made it back.
Yeah.
You're only 15 years older now.
I'm like crawling back and like getting older, like with every crawl, like help me. Terrible.
Yeah. As soon as you cross over the state line, you go back to normal.
I just go boom, and like I'm back to like 26 or whatever the hell I am. I don't know how old I am.
I just want to say really quick, mentioned that Sharon Jones just died as well, which is really sad news.
Yeah, I was telling you earlier, Peter, this year fucking sucks. I don't think a lot of people are going to argue with that. Unless maybe they had some sort of personal success this year. But I just know for a fact that when the New Year's comes around, that probably more people than not are going to be like, thank God this year is over. I mean, just in the fact of how many musical artists we've lost this year, let alone other events that transpired.
That's true.
I don't usually advocate this, but I'm almost thinking this year we need to do like an in memoriam, even on Funk Radio.
That might be a good idea.
It's funny too, because when artists die, there's always like this weird joke that when artists die, it happens in threes, where like three of them die very close together. And we lost Leonard Cohen. We lost the guy from the Allman Brothers. No, not him. Shit, what's his name? Okay, well, some other guy died whose name I've forgotten. I will probably remember later on in the episode. He was a famous kind of Southern singer guy.
Rest in peace, guy.
Rest in peace, dude. With beard. He had a beard. I remember that. And then Sharon Jones just passed away yesterday. So I think for November, this is like the famous three. So that was sad. For those of you that don't know, Leonard Cohen sang the song Hallelujah that was made famous by the Shrek movie.
Oh.
That was obviously Sharon, before that, but
you're right. And Sharon Jones, we actually mentioned only a couple episodes ago. Because didn't she have an appearance in Luke Cage?
Yeah, that's what's so crazy. She was in the final, spoilers, she was in the final episode of Luke Cage in a scene. And I mean, again, I'm assuming that was probably filmed, you know, 8 to 12 months ago.
Right.
But, yeah, and she looked okay. I mean, I for those of you who don't know, listeners, she was battling with pancreatic cancer since, I believe, 2013. It went into remission, and everything seemed fine, and then it came back this year with a vengeance.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
Well, something I like sort of touched on when I posted on Facebook, on our Facebook page, that it's... I'm glad that, because I know that she didn't really find fame until like the last 15 years of her life or so. I think she died at what, 60 or so?
Yep.
I believe. So I always found that kind of interesting that she, like her musical career didn't really start until she was 45 years old, which is interesting in itself. But then, you know, I'm glad that it finally happened for her, because I know she had, earlier in her life, she had tried to, you know, tried to break into the music business, but then studios are basically saying that she wasn't good looking enough to make it big. But then at some point later in life, she actually got that chance with Daptone Records. So
I was going to say, I was reading an article. It might have been the one you posted, or it might have been a different one. I'm not sure, because I was just trying to absorb information about it. But her careers before she became famous were actually kind of badass. She was an armored car driver for Wells Fargo, and after that, she was a correctional officer at Rikers Island.
Oh, wow.
Which is basically like a guard at a very intense prison.
Huh. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I never really knew what her past careers were.
So
aside from the music, so that's interesting. Yeah.
Even before she was famous, she was badass. So she will be missed. Yeah, I mean, I was kind of thinking about that. Like, Daptones needs a contingency plan, because unfortunately, as we mentioned in a prior episode, Charles Bradley doesn't seem to be doing great either. Knock on wood, he makes a full recovery, but
well, yeah. you said before that he's had some health issues.
Yeah,
frequently, right?
Yeah, most of his life was really hard. He was homeless for a very long time, and all that just took a major toll on his body. So he's never been in the best of shape, but yeah. So,
and he's no spring chicken either. I mean,
he's
I don't know how old he is, but he's getting up there.
I believe he's in his 60s.
Well, let's turn this conversation around.
Let's turn that frown upside down.
So, Kyle, something I don't really remember exactly how I thought of this specific topic for today. It might have been that I think I was actually editing the last episode or one of the previous episodes, and the term bootleg was loosely thrown into a sentence somewhere, and that term has come up a lot in knowing about music and studying music, I guess, through the show, but it's not always in the same context. It doesn't always really seem to mean the same thing whenever I hear it. So it got me thinking, partially because of that, but also because I know in the near future we want to do an episode about kind of like the chronology of like illegal music
downloading
and whatever possibly preceded that, but probably mostly about downloading. So actually this kind of worked out nicely, because this is kind of a nice lead in to that topic.
Talking
about bootlegs. So obviously the term bootlegging comes from the Prohibition days, when people were not allowed to sell liquor, but they did anyway in secret. I don't have it in front of me, but I believe the term itself was like people would hide liquor bottles in their
pant leg.
in their boots or something, or a pant leg or something. Yeah, like that. So that's kind of where the term comes from. But, you know, in the broad sense, bootlegging is of course, you know, the unauthorized distribution of something, whether it be liquor or even, you know, I know bootlegging movies is probably the most common term nowadays, where, you know, you illegally record a movie with a movie camera or something and then you sell it on the street. But with the interesting thing I found in researching this is that with music, there's actually multiple different definitions for it that are all kind of under one umbrella thing of basically music that's just released unofficially or by someone who's not really meant to release it. That's the broad definition of it, but there's a lot of like specific, I guess, sub definitions of what it actually means. And I found it really interesting. I've been looking forward to doing this one. Before we start with what it actually means in the different, you know, cases, have you heard this term thrown around a lot as well?
Oh yeah. The concept of bootleg, I mean, I can guarantee that either through, you know, legal or illegal means, I'm sure I came across some bootleg copies of things. I remember, I think my first experience with bootlegging was I had a neighbor, this was when I was like 12 or 13, I had a neighbor who was far more computer savvy than I was. He was an adult at the time, I was a kid, and him and my dad were decent friends and neighborly enough. And he was able to get a bootleg copy of Star Wars Attack of the Clones and the first Spider-Man movie. and burned them onto a DVD, and he gave them to me and my dad, just like, I don't know if he had like extra copies or what he was doing with it, but he's like, here. And it was like, it wasn't like, you know, someone in a camera or someone in a theater with a camera, sorry. It was like fairly legit. It looked a little like, you know, like when you upload a video to YouTube multiple times, slowly the quality of that video degrades.
It
kind of felt like that, but yeah, I mean, they were played in our DVD player like a regular DVD, but it was like bootleg copies of the first Spider-Man and Attack of the Clones, which had not yet come out on DVD. So that was kind of my first experience.
So they were sourced from, not from DVDs that had been commercially released, but maybe some source copier.
They may have, yeah, they may have been sourced from some that got leaked or that got leaked early. In similar fashion, a lot of Oscar movies end up getting leaked early online because they send screeners to Academy members. And some of those people ripped the DVD and put it up online. This may have been a similar case back then. Maybe they were up for best VFX. I don't know. But it definitely looked like it was like a digital copy, because it wasn't like, you know, the camera was shaking or moving or you heard audience members. But it was kind of washed out. It was a little like lesser quality digitally, but to a 12-year-old kid, I was like, sweet, I get to see the movie before it comes out on DVD.
Well, that's Kyle's bootlegging story.
Yeah, sorry. Kind of went off on a tangent.
If you are a police officer,
please don't contact me. I live at 123 Fake Street.
Would you guys, being you and your family, would you even be in the wrong in that case, though? Because you didn't sell it, or like, you didn't download it, you didn't sell it, you didn't buy it. There was no exchange of anything, as far as I'm concerned.
That's a good question. That's a really good question.
It's kind of similar to, I was thinking about this the other day, how there's all these websites that, you know, people upload TV shows, and you can go watch entire TV shows online for free for, you know, very easily. Mm-hmm. Pretty much any show you can think of, you know, not using Netflix or anything, just some other site. And I think there's a question of, is it illegal to watch those on there? Because if they're there and you're not the one who's uploading it, you're just streaming something that's available, is it illegal for you to do that? I don't think it is.
I think
technically it's on the person who put it up there.
Exactly. And oftentimes studios or the RIAA or what have you will go after the ones that uploaded it and not the ones who consumed it.
Right.
That being the case, it's usually a lot safer to consume the stuff streaming than it would be to download it, because sometimes they consider downloading or the act of downloading to be distribution, because you're downloading your computer, and they could say, well, you have the intent to, you know, give it to other people. It's like, and you can't prove otherwise.
And I think that highlights also like the difference in that system versus like torrenting or other kinds of downloading.
Exactly.
Because you're not technically taking a copy for yourself. You're just viewing someone else's copy,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
So, anyway, we're a little bit off track, but I guess it's all generally in the same thing. So let's start off with some definitions of bootlegging. I found quite a few. I would say there's... I found five different definitions, but one of them has like sub cases, I guess. So the first kind of bootlegging is when you have a recording of a live concert. So someone sneaks recording equipment into a concert, records that performance, and then distributes it in some way after that. I when I first, you know, read it as an example, I thought, you know, that can't really be that common. I almost wrote it off as just being kind of an uncommon thing. But actually, it's a lot more common than I thought. Apparently, a lot of people do this, or at least used to do it. Especially, I mean, it's funny though, because it became a lot easier with technology. As you know, you can't take an entire, you know, recording studio's worth of equipment into a concert. But you know, as you know, personal recorders and stuff got smaller with the advances of technology, it became easier for people to sneak stuff in, and the quality of those things has also gotten better. I also read that a number of bootlegs originated with FM radio broadcasts of live or previously recorded live performances. So people would actually give these to radio stations so that they could play the performance. The otherwise, you know, you wouldn't really be able to hear in any way unless it was officially recorded, which is probably one in 1,000 performances.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Or if you were there. And so this, I guess, is a way for more people to hear this performance in a way that's not really legitimate, but it's, I don't know. It lets more people experience it.
True. Now, I guess this idea of recording a live concert could be contributed to either an audio or video recording of said concert. I assume audio would obviously be a lot easier.
Right.
Video well, would be... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I just... I don't really... I'm sure video is... I didn't even think about that, video being an aspect of it as well. I'm sure that is a thing. Possibly even more so than just the straight audio. Because I was only looking at it from an audio perspective. But yeah, I'm sure video does play a part in that as well.
True. Now, when you say that bootlegs originated with FM radio broadcasts, that's like... That's not them recording a radio broadcast to, say, a cassette or whatever. That's actually them recording it live at the event and then giving it to stations to play.
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
I noticed that, and again, I didn't write this down for whatever reason, but I was doing a bit of reading because I'll tell you right now why, the reason why. The thing with bootlegs is that there's way more history and content that we can fit into a single episode. And it's all really interesting, but, you know, we had to kind of cut it down to be reasonable here. Mm-hmm. Something I remember reading about this case with the live concerts is that people would sometimes, you know, aside from bringing in their own, like, personal recorders, they would actually hook up some kind of recording equipment to the, I can't remember what they call it, but basically when you have a concert and you have, like, the mixing boards and everything that make sure all, like, the output of the singers and the instruments and everything is going out to the speakers, out to the mm-hmm. audience. People were hooking up recorders to that equipment and getting like the straight feed through that, through the mics and the audio, rather than like trying to record their own copy of it. Mm-hmm. So presumably the quality of that would be much greater.
Yeah.
If they can manage to do that. Now I don't remember all the cases, but I think in some cases, the people who were managing like the audio engineering at the performances sometimes maybe took a cut and let them do it. Sometimes they were the actual ones doing it. Like it wasn't separate people. It was just the audio engineers decided, hey, we're going to keep our own recording of this thing that we're working on and sell it. So that actually became probably one of the more common ways that this was done. But I do remember reading that at some point, once it kind of caught on that this was happening, there would be a lot of raids at concerts basically to stop people from doing this. Huh. And a lot of people were arrested doing it that way.
Wow.
So
that's cool.
I don't know how common this is anymore. I've personally never really heard of this, but like I said, it's a lot more common than I personally knew. So I don't know if you've ever heard anything like that.
No, I didn't realize it was such a widespread thing that they had to raid concerts to put a stop to it.
Yeah. So that, at least, I don't think it's as much of a thing anymore, probably because of that. I know that did cut down a lot on that going on, but it's interesting though, because, you know, with today, you know, everyone has a smartphone, everyone has an audio and video recorder in their pocket. I don't know if people necessarily record entire concerts with the intention of selling it.
I wouldn't assume so. I think a lot of people nowadays,
the quality is kind of bad.
Yeah, I think nowadays people kind of record it for the posterity of saying, oh, look, I was there.
Yeah.
Put it up on YouTube or Facebook or whatever. But I don't think most phone audio recorders have gotten to that level where you can fully kind of bootleg something well. I mean, their video recording is probably decent enough.
Yeah.
On a lot of newer phones, but Just the other week, I was at a concert in L.A. to see the band Kaleo, and I recorded a couple segments of songs that I liked, and, like, it was it was okay. I mean, you could hear the song, but certain stuff was so, like, kind of blown out at the high levels that it was just, like, crackly. Probably because I was, like, you know, 20 feet away from the band. But it was a small venue. But,
But recording, like, a big, open, loud space like that is really difficult, and you can tell... Yeah, and you can tell, like, if you listen to a live album by a band, I mean, they really have their shit together. You know, it sounds very good, because they're obviously taking it from the straight, like, mic feeds from everybody on stage. That's really the only way you can really effectively record a concert, I think. So I think that explains partially why that one method was so popular, is that, like you were saying, even with our technology today, it's very hard to get something that sounds decent.
Exactly.
Let alone worth buying.
Exactly. So yeah, not to keep us moving forward a little bit, but
no, we should. So the next definition of bootleg, in the broad sense, it's a rare version of a music track that's smuggled from the recording studio itself. This can actually take several different forms, and it's pretty much always without the artist's involvement. It's usually from someone who works in the studio, such as like an audio engineer or someone like that. So one form this can take is a music demo, and we had an episode about this not too long ago, discussing the differences between demo versions of a song and like the final recording. Just to recap quickly, basically, you know, if the artist wants to work out some kinks in the song or get a general idea for how it feels before doing like the actual recording of it, they record a demo to just see how it sounds. Sometimes it's also used to like sell a song basically to a record label. They'll record like a lower quality version to say, hey, I want to perform this, and they say yay or nay. So sometimes demos typically are not released, as we discussed in that episode, released to the public, but sometimes you can get you can have someone from the studio who kind of smuggles that copy out and starts distributing it for one reason or another. The rarity of those, I think, helps a lot with its value. You also promo copies, which is basically, it's a copy of a record which is issued to music publishers or radio stations. So for example, if a pop song is coming out, it's not released yet on any kind of thing for anybody. They may start playing it on the radio before it actually comes out. Obviously the radio has a copy of it so that they can play it, right? And those are called promo copies. So they're not supposed to be sold commercially to the everyman, but sometimes these promo copies one way or another get taken and then released before the actual release of the thing itself. You also have unfinished mixes. I don't know if this is as common, but every so often you may have like a work in progress cut of a song that's not completely done. Sometimes that can get smuggled out of the studio and sold off. You also have tracks that are just unreleased completely. For whatever reason, you know, a record label may say, okay, we're going to record and, you know, mix a song together. But then even once it's done, they may say, well, we don't see the pop value in this, or it doesn't fit on an album or something. So for some reason, they just don't release it. But one way or another, again, it gets bootlegged from the studio and, you know, becomes popular. I've noticed that there's actually, there's a couple of interesting cases of this. One I'll mention later, but another, there was a bootleg of early singles by The Who that were never released. It was called Who's Zoo. So somebody found somehow acquired a lot of these singles that were never released, and they said, hey, we're going to put them all together on one album. And they sold that album. And the funny thing is that bootleg became so popular that it actually inspired The Who to release an official album called Odds and Sods, which basically undid that was basically their way of fighting it back against the bootleggers, because they were like, hey, they're taking money away from us. Let's release this stuff officially. Then people will buy that.
Yeah, I was trying to actually think of some other examples of like unreleased tracks that might actually be kind of an interesting future topic as well, outside of demo tracks. I know I keep going back to this one album I had, that Nirvana triple disc set I had. Had a lot of previously unreleased tracks of songs they either decided weren't good enough, they just couldn't work out. And I think a lot of artists do that eventually as well, especially popular artists.
You mean release their unreleased
stuff?
They
release previously unreleased stuff, you know, just because it's like, well, you know, our popularity is on the low end, or on the decline. We're not going to release this stuff anyways. Let's release it and try to make a buck off it. I know a lot of people joke that after Tupac passed away, he had more songs recorded, like, waiting in the wings than he ever released while he was alive. So I think they came out with, like, two full posthumous albums of stuff of his.
Oh.
So that's also obviously another reason.
What you mentioned a second ago actually reminded me of the episode we did a little while ago about compilation albums.
Yeah.
Like all the different forms those take and why they exist. The unreleased tracks, I think we probably mentioned that too in that episode, is that, you know, that's one example where the one reason they may later release it, like years later, is because they already recorded it. It's there. People will buy it because they've never heard it before. And adds no extra work to them.
Exactly.
Because it's already done.
Exactly.
So it's just easy money.
Yeah.
So, but in cases like The Who, they have the additional motivation of trying to make some of that lost money back.
Yeah, true.
When that bootleg came out.
Very true. That's funny.
I did like reading about the examples of where stuff actually became popular because it was illegally distributed.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, I found those stories kind of interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
So the last thing that can come out of a studio is, I don't know how common this is, but sometimes you can have what's called the stem tracks from the song. Basically, a master recording of a song is made up of several stem tracks, each one of those being the isolated instrument or vocal tracks that all compiled together make up the master. So I don't have any specific examples of this, but I guess sometimes you can get like the isolated vocals, for example, bootlegged out so that people can eventually use it for a remix or something.
Huh.
I don't think that one's as common, but it's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
So on to more definitions. A bootleg can also mean an unauthorized remix of a song. So the next three definitions are a bit shorter, but they all have to do with like DJs and remixing. So one of those three is an unauthorized remix of a song. So basically, I think this happened a bit more like in the 90s and possibly the 80s, when remixing was still kind of more of a niche thing. So basically in this case, the DJ would mix their own remix of a song and then release it without permission from the original artist. In another version, the remix of a song only uses pieces of that finished song to create the remix. Because a lot of remixes will, for example, maybe cut in different instrumentation that the DJ adds on, or they'll record their own vocals or instruments or whatever, or pieces of other songs. In most, if not all, official remixes, the DJ actually has access to those stem tracks I just mentioned,
mm-hmm.
Provided to them by the original artist. So if you want to make a remix of Uptown Funk or something, you know, the DJ will receive, they say, hey, I want to make a remix of this. And then they receive all the individual like instrument and vocal tracks from Uptown Funk. And so they can manipulate each of those independently of each other and do whatever they want, which makes the remixing go a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in this case, a bootleg remix would be, you don't have access to all of that. You only have access to that final master track that anyone can have access to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's only made up of pieces of that finished track. And then lastly, we have, it seems to me that bootleg was an early term for what is mostly referred to now as mashups. We did discuss this a long time ago. I believe the episode was like, what was it? Remixes, mashups, and mixtapes.
Yes.
This, I don't know, it was probably a year or two ago. Probably a couple of years ago now. But to recap that, a mashup is basically a remix of two or more songs melded together so that they make one pleasing sound, I guess. Rather than just one song.
I was going to say, obviously there's lots of mashups I can mention, but I know there's this one guy called DJ Earworm who every year on YouTube towards the end of the year he'll upload a mashup of all of that year's most popular songs mashed together. Nice. Sometimes they're actually pretty good. I mean, I hate most pop music, but sometimes they turn out well. Sorry.
Nice.
Random aside, fun fact.
It's relevant. So, sort of like where a DJ would release the unauthorized mix of a song, this is a similar case, except it's just two songs. It's mixed together instead of one, and the DJ doesn't get permission from either artist. That term nowadays, especially with the age of platforms like SoundCloud, where a lot of people have access to this kind of technology, the term mashup has kind of become the term for that. But from what I can tell, the old term for that was also called bootleg. So as you can tell, listeners, obviously there's a lot of different things that term can mean in music. We touched on this a little bit already, but I kind of want to go a little bit more into reasons for bootlegging music.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I think especially, you know, if you're going to sell it, I mean, money is the obvious motivator.
Yeah.
In any bootleg, really. You know, we're not going to avoid that. But I noticed that in a lot of cases, it was more, yes, money was a factor, but it was also more about being able to release music that was not released before or, you know, getting it out to more people than was intended. So I kind of appreciated that there is often some kind of like artistic reasoning behind it. So in one of the broad cases, music is promoted to the public, but it's not officially released. So you know how I was saying earlier about how like with promo copies, you have music that's being promoted to the masses, but it's not actually released yet.
Mm-hmm.
There have been some cases where, and there's a notable case here with Bob Dylan in the mid-60s. Some of his new upcoming songs were being played on the radio, but they hadn't been released yet. But in 66, Dylan was in a motorcycle accident, and he largely disappeared from the public eye for a while. So the release of his stuff was kind of put on hold. And songs that were recorded, you know, by partially with other artists, and, you know, songs that were played on the radio were all of a sudden not actually released. Mm-hmm. So people were expecting this stuff and then they couldn't get it. So some pioneering bootleggers did manage to buy the reel-to-reel tape from, I guess, from the recording studio or whatever. That's obviously a format that's used like in the studio, not commercially. They were able to buy these unreleased songs and they pressed about 2,000 copies of those songs to vinyl. And that was actually considered the first major example of bootlegging music. This case in 1966, when this Bob Dylan music wasn't released for whatever reason. And people were like, we really want to have access to this. So they went and did it.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I bet if anyone has one of those original 2000 copies, they're probably really rare and expensive.
Yeah, yeah. And that reminds me too, is that, again, the topic is much broader than we can talk about in the show, but just touching on this really quickly, it's interesting when like the actual distribution of bootlegged vinyl records is that, you know, you got to put them in a sleeve, but obviously bootleggers don't have access to the sleeve artwork.
Mm-hmm.
Or they, you know, especially if it's something that isn't released, they don't want to, even if they did have access to the artwork, they wouldn't want to draw attention to it by being like, hey, here's that album that doesn't exist, come buy it. So what they would often do is just have blank sleeves, and then they would just stamp like the name of the album on there. So it was really inconspicuous and boring looking. Most often it was because that's just all they really had access to. But if you look up pictures of like bootleg records, for example, you'll see a lot of labels that are just basically blank with a stamp on it. So that's kind of an iconic thing with that. So another case reasoning behind bootlegging would be if a band's live performance or performances didn't really keep up with the public demand. A good example of this was in the late 60s, in 69. The Rolling Stones had their first U.S. tour in several years. There was an enterprising bootlegger known as Dub, that was his nickname, who decided to record some of these shows. Because obviously, if they hadn't been around in years, now they're just doing a few shows, obviously the demand for that is going to be very high. But, you know, if they're not releasing anything new, you know, that's not going to meet the demand by any means. So, in this recording that Dub released called Liver Than You'll Ever Be, the thing that kind of confused me a little bit is that it actually received rave reviews from Rolling Stone magazine and ended up selling several tens of thousands of copies. That's so funny. I guess somehow Rolling Stone got wind of this really popular bootleg and even reviewed it to the point where, you know, and then it sold like as much as possibly as much as like a regular album would. And I think this guy Dub actually went on to found some bootleg company or record label or something. I don't exactly remember. But he was actually kind of one of the bigger names in the whole bootlegging scene. If you remember a few minutes ago, I was talking about The Who with that album that they released to kind of counteract the bootleggers. The Rolling Stones actually did something similar with this. Their album was called Get Your Ya-Ya's Out. Not too much later in 1970, they actually released this directly because of that bootleg record. Because obviously, like, well, hey, if people are buying this by the tens of thousands, we should be making money off of this.
Yeah, yeah, that's funny. That's another example of an artist getting wind of a bootleg that reveals to them, like, hey, you know, people are demanding more of us as artists. Maybe we should actually go ahead and release this stuff. Mm-hmm. That's kind of interesting that sometimes artists can be spurred to do that by the fact that, for lack of a better term, money's being taken out of their pockets by not releasing it.
I'm trying to think if there's any like modern day examples of that with, you know, music torrenting and everything. Like, I don't know if rare or unreleased stuff gets released through those channels.
Like if an album gets leaked online, say before it releases or something, or before they plan to release it. I don't know. That's a good question. I know albums have leaked online, but it's usually like it's leaked before it's released, but it's planned to be released. Like Adele's album leaked a week or two early. I know that.
Yeah, I've heard cases like that, but I don't really know if I've heard any modern day examples of something got released that wasn't supposed to, and so the band was like, let's release it officially.
I would assume that nowadays, that if it was leaked online and they didn't plan to release it, the recording studio would just, like, witch hunt the person that leaked it and crush them.
Yeah. This is kind of... I know we talked about movies at the beginning. I'm going to talk about video games for a second. What was that game where the point of the game was, like, you're working in a game studio making a game, and then a bunch of people. What's it?
Game Dev Story.
Maybe.
It's almost like The Sims, but you're like a little game studio, and you make games, and you grow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Game Dev Story.
Do you know where I'm going with this?
I do remember there was one like event achievement in the game, sort of, where it would be like, oh, you know, your game has been bootlegged or pirated, and somehow it forces you to like lose money basically on sales.
Is that what you're talking about? That's where I'm going. I think the only way you can get that achievement is because people were pirating the game online. And so whoever made this game actually put out seed copies of that game on those torrent sites so that people would illegally download it. But in that copy of the game, you eventually lose and you go out of business in the game because people illegally downloaded your game rather than paying for it.
I was gonna say I may be wrong on this, but I think that for people that actually pirated the real game, like the game dev story, that event always automatically happened to them.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's so I found that interesting that was their response to the pirating, is that they actually allowed people to download the game, but then it was a version that was secretly made them lose because of the things that they did, essentially. I thought that was a really interesting kind of response to that.
Yeah, I forgot about that. That I know a couple of games have actually done that recently, where rather than fight downloaders, they just release like fake versions of the game where it's obvious that you pirated it. Like, I forgot there was one game where, like, literally when you pirated it, your character wore like an eye patch or something, like he was a pirate.
Oh, interesting.
And they would put little things like that in the game just to kind of make the game more annoying for people. Or like sometimes they would release a version of the game where, like, if you play it, it was like impossible to win because it was automatically on like crazy hard setting.
Oh, wow. And yeah, I imagine there's a few different games that have kind of done that. That's kind of an interesting thing in itself. So I don't know exactly how we got on that sidetrack, but I think we were just saying that, like, we don't really know any musical equivalent to that.
Yeah, like a musical equivalent of some of the makers or trolling pirates, I guess.
Yeah. You know what? We may find more about this when we research for that next topic.
Yeah.
With the pirating music. We may actually learn more about
digital,
that.
Digital pirating, I'm sure.
Yeah. You'll find out, listeners. We will too. Mm-hmm. So the last reason I had written down here for bootlegging, obviously, I'm sure there's more, but these are just kind of like prominent examples, is where an album release is expected, but then it's canceled. There was a really prominent example of this in 1987 with Prince. I think it was only maybe days or weeks before his album, The Black Album, was supposed to come out. He changed his mind and said, no, we're actually not going to release this. I had a little bit of a hard time finding his specific reasoning for it.
Because he's Prince.
Yeah, I guess so. But anyway, so obviously this album was done and it was ready to come out. And in fact, 500,000 copies were already pressed and were somewhat being distributed already because they were getting ready to release it.
Mm-hmm.
But then he was like, well, never mind. We're actually not going to release this album. So they had, you know, everybody had to destroy all these copies. But of those 500,000 copies, all but about 100 of them were destroyed. So around the world, I think especially in Europe, that's where most of the copies were salvaged. People immediately started bootlegging this album because they're like, well, if you're not going to release it officially, we're going to do it for you, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, 7 years later, Prince actually did end up releasing the album officially in 1994. Yeah,
that's interesting. I don't know if that was because it was out there, you know, in the world anyways.
I think it was because of that, yeah.
So he's like, whatever. Yeah, Prince is an interesting guy. I swear, if we ever ended up doing like a full episode on him, he actually would be a good example of if we ever do an episode on artists that get in fights with their record labels.
Hmm.
Remember, because for a while he changed his name to the artist previously known as Prince.
Oh,
because
yeah.
The record label argued that they owned his brand and name. So he's like, okay.
Oh, is that why he did
something
that?
Else.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
So.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, so that's the... That's an overview of bootlegs. Like I mentioned a couple of times, there's a lot more than what we mentioned here, and it's all, at least I've personally found it really interesting. So if you listeners are interested in learning more, you can visit your local library or just go into Google and type in music bootlegs.
I was going to say, Peter, libraries are dead. They got bootlegged too much.
Yeah, I guess we didn't really talk about bootlegging books or literature.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, I wonder how that would. I mean, especially with the audiobooks now, or not audiobooks. I'm sorry, ebooks.
Yeah,
becoming more popular now. That just makes it all the more easier. Wow, mm-hmm. All the more easy to pirate and distribute literature.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if we'll do it next week or I don't know what the circumstances will be, but. If not next week, then soon we'll be doing kind of a history of digital music pirating.
I'm down for next week if you are. We can call this like analog bootlegs and then digital bootlegs.
There you go. In the meantime, if you have illegally downloaded music. Don't tell us on Facebook.
Yeah.
If you know other good examples of bootlegs that were historically significant, tell us on Facebook.
Or if you have like old, like analog bootleg copies of like cassettes or records or whatever, then I guess that is a bit more safe to let us know. It's like, oh yeah, I bootlegged this back in the 60s. I don't think the cops are going to come arrest you.
Those bootlegs must be worth so much now, though. Oh, especially thinking, when there's only like 2,000 copies of it or whatever.
Yeah, certain ones that just weren't released that got bootlegged in small volumes. Like if you have one of those, it's probably like a couple grand at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess we didn't really mention cassettes at all, but I know that was kind of, that helped a lot with bootlegging as well once those became kind of more commercially standard.
Viable. Yeah.
Anyway, whatever, just tell us something on Facebook. We don't really care what you say. I mean, we care what you say, but it can be any, god damn it. Facebook.com/getyourfunk.
Talk to us.
Because apparently I can't talk to you properly.
It's okay.
You can also, if you're not already doing this, you can follow us on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/getyourfunk or on mixcloud.com/getyourfunk. Mixcloud, you can't comment on the tracks, but on SoundCloud you can.
Yeah,
you can comment if you want. The reason we have Mixcloud, if you don't know, is that we can upload as many episodes as we want for free. Whereas SoundCloud, we got tired of paying the money.
Yeah, Mixcloud is like
getting enough return on it.
I was going to say Mixcloud is like our back catalog, whereas SoundCloud is like our 4 or 5 most recent episodes.
Yeah, exactly. So that's that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter which one you listen to it on. Just listen, listeners. Yeah. That's why you're listeners. If you don't, then you're not listeners.
Don't pirate us, please, or bootleg us, even though it's on the internet for free already.
Even though we let you download it already. I guess bootlegging a podcast could only exist if... Actually, the only way it could exist is if it's one of those podcasts that you pay for.
Yeah.
And people have free copies of it online. Or if people... If someone made a website for Funk Radio and claimed that they were us, and then we're trying to sell our episodes.
Exactly.
Or something.
Yeah. Hmm. Sort of.
Something to think about.
Imposter Kyle and Imposter Peter.
Although, to be fair, I don't think they would make any money because no one listens to us and we're free. So.
I was going to say, you know, it would be really sad as if they actually did make more money than us by impostering us. Is that a word? Impostering. I've made a new word.
Right. Yeah.
It's like they do us better than we do.
God, that would be funny.
Yeah.
I would also be mad. All right. Bye, listeners.
Bye, we love you. Listen to us next week on Funk Radio.